What's up, guys? Welcome to this very special episode of the Sat Signal. Today, we are joined by Aussie Bitcoiner Zane Truscott. Now, we had a really, really cool discussion here. We went into some of the basics to start with about what he is seeing, because part of it every day for Zane is talking to Aussies who are getting into Bitcoin for the first time. And I asked him, what are you hearing most often? What are people's fears? What don't they understand? And it was things like, how do I buy it? How do I secure it? Can I buy it in my self-managed super funds? And so much more. We then talked about inflation. We talked about why you need to get assets that grow faster than about 14%. And if you don't, you're going to be going backwards. We talk about Jeff Booth. We talk about the layer one technologies and so much more on this pod. I think you're really, really going to enjoy this one. It is very Australian, very grounded, and really exciting. And also why Zane at the end shared a story of why he's moving his focus out of real estate, because that's where he's from. He talks about a development site that him and his wife bought in Palm Beach on the Gold Coast, and he compares it dollar for dollar, the development site in Palm Beach versus Bitcoin, and you will be shocked by what he tells us. So tune in for that. With that said, guys, make sure you like, subscribe, and we'll see you on the other side. What's up, guys? Welcome to this special episode of the Sat Signal. Today, we are joined by Aussie Zane Truscott. Mate, welcome to the show. How you doing?
So good to be here, Adam. I've been following the journey and I find it quite inspirational, and it's great to be having a chat to you about Bitcoin today, mate.
Mate, I love having Aussies on the show because I think we have a kind of unique approach to Bitcoin, but we also come from a unique context. Australia's quite different to many countries in the world in the way we invest, our level of wealth, the way we think about things. But what I'd like to do is I'd like to kick off by you just telling us a little bit about what you do on a daily basis, so the audience just gets to know who Zane is and maybe a little bit of your journey into Bitcoin. And then I want to talk about, you know, the common challenges and misconceptions that you see the everyday Aussie has with this asset class, because I know you talk to people every single day via your YouTube channel. So let's start with, you know, who is Zane? Like, what do you do day to day and how did you arrive at Bitcoin?
Yeah, so I've always been into property. So I grew up in a very much entrepreneurial wealth creation kind of a landscape, mindset, environment, whatever you want to call it. So I've always been very inquisitive about ways to, you know, get ahead, create wealth. And of course, being an Aussie, we tend to lean towards real estate as a, I guess we kind of consider it the apex property, the great Australian dream. And then we understand that investing in property is a great way to build wealth historically in Australia. And so, you know, I've always leaned into that and done that. And, you know, in 2013, I heard about this Bitcoin thing. And I guess like most Bitcoiners, when we first hear about it, we kind of dismiss it. I was very much immersed in my business at the time. We had an education company, not dissimilar to your old company, actually, where we used to teach, run seminars all around the country. And we were predominantly sharing the message of self-care and self-education. So it was all about being self-responsible when it comes to not just your life, but in particular your health and how it is that you go on a hunt for information. And so we really spent about the best part of 16 years doing that. And then COVID came along and we kind of got to a point, and my wife and I were sort of starting to think about ways to perhaps exit that business because we've been doing it for so long, and, you know, we'd raised three kids and we were like a lot of travel, a lot of capital investment to keep that business going. And of course we couldn't travel. And so we used that as a time to really reset, rethink about where we wanted to go. And it was really during that time that I took a deep dive into Bitcoin. I'd already started investing in Bitcoin in 2018. I read the Bitcoin Standard in 2017. I subscribed to a publication out of Melbourne by a company, I think at the time it was called Fat Tail Media. They may still even exist, but there was a gentleman by the name of Sam Volkery. And he was one of the kind of the early writers in this space in the Australian, you know, landscape. It wasn't just about Bitcoin, it was about other cryptos. But so in 2018, I took that precarious first step, which was to actually buy my first bag of satoshis of Bitcoin. And I remember I was sweating bullets, mate. I was just like, shit, what have I done? You know, and even though I'd read the Bitcoin Standard and I'd, you know, read some publications and some other material, I still didn't really understand it. But I knew enough to know that this was something that was important. I knew that we were kind of, I felt that we were transitioning, you know, post GFC, we got caught up with some real estate deals that went bad that we'd bought just prior to the GFC. And then of course, we ended up selling real estate quite some years later for a loss because it just took so many years to recover. And so with all of that, I just started really diving down the rabbit hole, and then 2020 came along and I just really went to a deeper level. And it's really over the past 5 years that I've pretty much spent 2 hours a day, I would say, just studying Bitcoin. I've become very much immersed in what Bitcoin represents, the problems that it solves. And just earlier this year, I started to share what I know on a YouTube channel, and I had no idea that it would actually go anywhere. It was kind of just me sitting in my car, just sharing my thoughts on a camera on my iPhone with my little dog sitting next to me. And a couple of videos just sort of took off, and I kind of realized at that time that people had a need for this sort of education. And I think when you're in the rabbit hole, Adam, and you might find this yourself, you don't kind of realize, you become a little insulated at times from how little most people know, how little the outside world actually knows about this asset. And so I felt like I was sharing really base level stuff, but people were really responding. And so I just kept doing it. And then that led me to, a lot of people were saying, how do we connect with you? So I started offering consultations, and now it's just gotten a little bit out of hand because I just keep, people just keep booking these consultations with me. But what's fascinating about it is I'm really getting to learn a lot as to what people's mindset is. And I would say 95% of the people that I've spoken to are Aussies, typically, you know, I'd say in their mid to late 40s and above. They can see some of the threats that are out there right now is in terms of, you know, to their retirement savings potentially and superannuation. So, yeah, it's interesting. I'm at a point now where I'm really enjoying the process. It's kind of exhausting because I'm just sort of doing it on my own at the moment, but I'm just enjoying the process of connecting with other Aussies and learning about, I guess, their level of interest in Bitcoin and the part that they see that it can play in their financial future and their retirement. So hopefully that's a nice roundup of where I'm at and where I've come from. But today it's really all about Bitcoin for me.
So just if the, I know listeners are going to ask, what's your YouTube channel? Where can I learn more? So just while we're here, let's get that out there. Where can people follow you?
It's just my name, at Zane Truscott on YouTube. That's probably where people are finding. Yep, at Zane Truscott, or I've got a website, zanetruscott.com. Yep.
For those of you not familiar with how YouTube works, you just go type in youtube.com/, and then the at symbol, and then Zane Truscott, and you'll find Zane and his channel there. So give him a follow. So, mate, you obviously talk to a lot of Aussies. I do as well. My DMs every single day. I get hundreds of DMs a day. What are people, when they get on a call with you, like what, where is the average Australian? I mean, I was just in Bitcoin Prague and Michael Saylor made the point on stage. He said, you guys in the room know something that 99.8% of people don't know. And this is a secret that you've been given. It's a gift. And if you're wise, you will take advantage of that secret. And over the next 21 years, and you can create generational wealth for real. And he laid out a plan. If you haven't seen the Bitcoin Prague, I'm sure you probably have, but others watching, watch the Michael Saylor Bitcoin Prague presentation. It's extraordinary, where he lays out exactly how to take advantage of that advantage. So what are you seeing now? Because it is super early, but what are you hearing from the average Aussie? Like, why are they interested in Bitcoin? Is it mostly they just want to make money, or are there other things you're hearing, like they're dissatisfied with the returns in real estate, or they're starting to understand that taxes and inflation are real things, and they're starting to get smarter and see the flaws. Like, what are you hearing on the ground from average Aussies?
Look, I don't know whether I'm talking to the average Aussie per se. Like I say, I'm talking to people who are kind of starting to think about retirement. And typically speaking, they've got some superannuation. Maybe they own a bit of real estate, partially or even fully. A lot of people actually, surprisingly, own their own home outright, and those kinds of things. And people are very open, that I find that, Adam. You know, they want to share kind of where they're at. And I don't really ask any personal questions per se. It's really about helping them to understand Bitcoin better as an asset and what it could mean for them if they, you know, treat it with the respect that it deserves. But for the most part, you know, people, they're thinking about retirement, and I sense that people can see that things don't look great at the moment. You know, the walls are maybe closing in a little. You know, they can see that there's this increasing narrative or this motion by the powers that be to kind of centralize everything and to maybe steal people's wealth, attack people's wealth, go after the very thing that people were told to do 40 years ago when they brought in, you know, in Australia, superannuation, which was basically, look, guys, we can't guarantee that we're going to be able to fund you in retirement. And so what we're going to do is bring in this thing called superannuation, and you're going to allocate to it over the course of your career, and then you'll be able to fund your own retirement. And so people have been diligently doing that for many, many years. The problem is most people don't pay attention to it until it's too late. And they don't realize that in an inflationary environment that we're in, and you and I both know it's not just CPI inflation, it's not just consumer price index, the price of eggs going up 50 cents in a year. It's the rate of monetary expansion. That's what creates true inflation. And so I think people, even though they may not be able to identify what the exact cause of it is, they can just sense that things aren't quite right. And I think as you get to our age, and I know you and I are very similar age, and most of the people I talk to are in our age bracket, we do start to think about our future, and not just for ourselves, but our kids as well. And so we're thinking in terms of, if things don't feel right, if things don't feel the same as they were 20 years ago, 30 years ago, when we were just getting started on our journey, then people start to question everything. And I think that's what's happening right now. And they see Bitcoin, they just hear little bits and pieces. I mean, you know, the reality is there's nothing you can't learn about Bitcoin if you want to learn about Bitcoin on YouTube or through reading books. It's all there. But people don't just need information in today's world. What they need is education and transformation. And in order for people to get that, to get a clear path to what I have to do, it takes work, it takes time, and it's time that most people don't have these days. And so, you know, I just find when people are able to sort of sit still for an hour or two and just ask the questions that are on their mind and have somebody who's been there before them, who's already been on this own journey themselves, had to answer these questions themselves like I have, mate, you wouldn't believe the feedback that I get. People are just like, shit, thanks so much. I didn't realize, you know, I had to do that, and you just made it sound so simple. And so I think it's just people looking, A, understanding there's a problem, B, realizing that their retirement accounts are potentially under threat. You know, a lot of people have a reasonable amount in super, and they can see this, you know, this potential motion that's coming in where they're going to tax unrealized gains and things like that. So they're just starting to feel a bit uneasy about the future, and they're looking for ways to deploy capital into an asset that is decentralized. And that's what Bitcoin is. And most people seem to understand that bit, but the bit that they're really struggling with is, you know, how do I set up my SMSF? Who do I go to that can set it up in a compliant way? You know, and also, how do I take self-custody so that I can sleep at night and not feel like I'm going to lose my private keys or whatever it might be. So it's generally those conversations.
So for the listeners who are not in Australia, SMSF means self-managed super fund. So in Australia, if you understand what a 401k is in the US, where it's optional to contribute to your retirement, in Australia, it's not optional. It's compulsory. So your employer, invests 10 or 12%, I can't remember what it is now, of your salary into your retirement. So what he's talking about here is when you can actually manage your own super fund or your own retirement fund, a bit like a Roth IRA in the US. So that's interesting that you said that people are interested in decentralization. That's interesting to me, because normally people are interested in number go up. Like, is this going to make me rich? Can I buy it for $100,000, sell it for $200,000? And to be clear, for a lot of people, you don't have to buy a whole Bitcoin. You can buy a fraction of a Bitcoin. You can buy $1,000 worth of Bitcoin. You don't have to buy a whole Bitcoin. But it's interesting that you said that they're interested in decentralization. Is that coming from people's distrust of the government? So, for example, with the superannuation rules, they seriously just move the goalposts, right? And this is what I've been so vocal about, saying it's complete rot and it's wrong, because these are responsible Australians who basically went to a low time preference, said, look, we'll sacrifice today, we'll put that money into our future, take less today, take the tax breaks so that we can take care of ourselves in the future and not be a burden on the system. And now the government's sort of selling it to the masses, going, don't worry, it only affects, those people with $3 million. That's only 0.845% or whatever it is, but it's actually 80,000 retirees in Australia, real human beings who sacrificed and worked hard and did the right thing and followed the rules. So it's profoundly wrong, and I don't care if it's 0.1%. It's not a question of right or left. It's a question of right or wrong. Is it right or wrong? It's wrong. So is that what you're seeing? Like, are people in approaching this time going, I don't trust the government now. I don't. Maybe after COVID, they don't trust the government. They don't trust the government to move the goalposts. I mean, I think government trust is taking a beating right now, but is that what's driving it? Center this
100%.
centralization?
Yeah, and 100%. And of course, like we know in Bitcoin, people typically come here for number go up in the beginning, but I believe people stay in Bitcoin for its decentralization. And the fact that you have, it's the first opportunity in history that we have as individuals to be completely financially autonomous with a bearer asset that we can take anywhere with no, without any permission, without any counterparty risk, if you do it right. But that's the operative statement, if you do it right. And unfortunately, most people who come to Bitcoin, who come only for the number go up, they're getting exposure to Bitcoin. They're either leaving it on an exchange, which is probably 90% of the people that I talk with, that they've made their first foray into Bitcoin. They've dabbled, they've dipped their toe in the water, and now they can see all of these other things going on that are making them realize, well, okay, Bitcoin's been the best performing asset over the past decade, and we've missed out on that. But we've got 10 years to retirement, 15 years to retirement, whatever it might be. And so now we're gonna take this seriously. And that's kind of where I would say 90% of the people are. They've had a little dabble, they've seen the number go up, okay, but now they're realizing, well, hang on, what if I actually took this seriously? And what I find really great, Adam, certainly about the people that I meet, is they want to learn. Like the questions they ask are, they're great questions. Like it's all to do with, how does it work, in terms of what's the best cold storage solutions that are out there? How do I, what is meant by a private key? How is that generated? How do I, what happens if something happens to me? If I go and put half my life savings into Bitcoin, what happens if I get hit by a bus tomorrow? Those kinds of questions, which I didn't ask those questions for years.
It's
It actually
terrifying for people, right?
it took my wife to give me a kind of a few nudges in the ribs to say, hey, maybe we should think about what the plan B is if something happens to you, because you're the only one who's done all the study on this thing. and has been driving this. So that kind of led me down a path towards the end of last year where I really wanted to discover what the options were, and I chose a certain path that was right for me. But the thing is that, I find that people aren't just frivolously just pouring their life savings into Bitcoin. They want to take things steady. They want to get the right guidance. They want to choose the right exchange or the right brokerage to actually onboard. And then they want to know, okay, what are the next steps that I can take so that I can sleep well at night, benefit from the number go up, and also ensure that if something happens to me, that pristine collateral, right, that digital gold, whatever you want to call it, is going to go to my successors, inheritance planning, whatever it might be.
So let's talk about some of those practicalities, because I know I get it all the time, and just the basics. People want to know the basics, like what is exchange risk? What is cold storage? So before we go further, I'm just going to let out a couple of contacts. One that I know we universally share, who's a friend mod and actually a partner with Unemployable, is Tony from the Bitcoin Way. And his team. There's a link in the description if you want to go over to the Bitcoin Way. They will help you with this. They have a coaching program where they hold your hand and actually help you do everything that we're about to talk about and guide you through with live one-on-one calls like this and help you become completely self-custodian and have a plan in place for if you hit your head or if you die or whatever, that your family, that your wealth transfers seamlessly and effortlessly. So they handle it from start to finish. I'm a client, you're a client. You can actually, they'll teach you how to run a Bitcoin node, which you'll understand when you go further down, but go the Bitcoin way. And in Australia, I don't know who you use, but we use Stormrake to acquire now. Stormrake's been great out of Melbourne. But I'd be interested to know who you use, if you've got somebody as well. But if you're interested in Stormrake, there's a link in the description as well. Do you use
Same.
Stormrake or someone else?
Yeah,
Same, yeah.
absolutely.
So we had Bish from Stormrake on the pod just recently. So yeah, use Stormrake. Stormrake charged 2%, which sounds high. When you look at Coinspot, for example, they charge 1%. But the difference is Bish and the Stormrake team, 5,000 clients in Australia. The reason they have 5,000 clients despite a 2% fee is because they save you on the spread. So what that means is the price that platforms like Coinspot and others are quoting on the Bitcoin has been marked up, and they're making margin over and above the actual rate that you can get it on the global market. Stormrake is a broker that will shop your order around, get you the very best price, and they pretty much guarantee that on a net basis, they'll beat anybody, which is, we found that to be true. But anyway, let's go back to the question. What is exchange risk? Why shouldn't somebody just go to CoinSpot or go to Stormrake, give them their money? I want to buy $100,000 worth of Bitcoin. Here it is, my 100 grand goes in, the Bitcoin gets purchased, and it's on Stormrake's wallet or it's in CoinSpot, wherever. Why is that a bad idea, no matter who that platform is? Why is it a bad idea, and what should they be doing?
So, as you well know, Adam, there's a saying in Bitcoin, not your keys, not your Bitcoin. And I think that is probably the number one statement or lesson that people need to drum into their head from the very first point that they get involved in Bitcoin. We have to understand that Bitcoin is a decentralized bearer asset. And
What
he
does
or
that
she
mean?
who, so something that we have. So if I've got a $100 bill, I am the bearer of that $100 bill. Okay. And it doesn't matter who's around us. I currently am the custodian of that bill for as long as I hold it. So I hold that bill. So if I hold the keys to the Bitcoin, I am the bearer of that Bitcoin. And so, it essentially means that when you have your Bitcoin for a prolonged period. Now, we know that in order to acquire Bitcoin, we have to use a brokerage or we have to use an exchange. I mean, we can, Adam and I can transfer Bitcoin between one another. So it's another way of us accessing Bitcoin. But nine times out of 10, the only way to really get Bitcoin is to actually set up an account with an exchange such as CoinSpot or CoinJar or Kraken or whatever it might be, or a brokerage such as Stormrake. And then open your account, and then you need to send money, Australian dollars or US dollars from your bank account to fund your account. And then once the funds are in your account, you can then buy Bitcoin on that exchange or with that broker. That's all great, and we all need to go through that step. However, what you don't want to do is leave your Bitcoin with that third party forever and a day, because essentially they are the custodian of your Bitcoin for as long as it's sitting with them. So they have the private key to your Bitcoin. And thankfully in Australia, we haven't had any calamities so far as exchanges going down, but we know it has happened in the world, and we saw it last cycle with the likes of FTX and Celsius and BlockFi. And there were people who entrusted their Bitcoin to these exchanges and they lost their Bitcoin. And so, for that reason, you want to make sure that you're abiding by rule number one in Bitcoin, and that is to take self-custody of your Bitcoin, not your keys, not your coins, as soon as possible. It's so
Yeah, I
important
think
to do that.
just to add to that, these are private companies in a new industry, right? So you have no visibility into what these guys are doing with your money. Sam Bankman-Fried was out there sponsoring F1 teams and rehypothecating other people's assets, meaning he was borrowing against people's assets that had been pledged. He was minding their Bitcoin for them, but he was borrowing against it and leveraging it and trading with it and doing all this crazy stuff. It's not like the fiat system, which is National Australia Bank and Commonwealth Bank. These are highly regulated, multi-billion dollar organizations with massive tenure in, oversight and so on. They're all a bunch of crooks, but they're rich crooks. They're like, and they
Deposits
got
are
lots of
insured up
liquidity.
to, you know, deposits are insured with the banks up to a certain level. I think it's 250K in Australia, is it not?
And so these exchanges are run by entrepreneurs, right? Like in a young industry, right? The oldest company in the space would be 16 or 17 years old. These are young businesses. So what Zane's saying here is super, super important, that you need to take the Bitcoin from their wallet and you need to transfer it into cold storage. So Zane, in simple terms, what's cold storage? What does that mean?
So when it comes to securing your Bitcoin, they're essentially, other than leaving it on an exchange, which we know is not secure for the long term, there's essentially two options. So you can either have a hot wallet, what's known as a hot wallet, which is an app essentially that you would download on your desktop or on your iPhone or Android. And that is probably the next step away from leaving your Bitcoin on an exchange. The next best way to secure your Bitcoin would be to download a hot wallet, such as, say, Aqua, a Bitcoin-only wallet. It's called Aqua. Proton wallet's another good one, Proton Bitcoin wallet. And so the thing to realize, though, is that the key, the private key that secures your Bitcoin, is generated online whenever you use a hot wallet, or otherwise known as a software wallet. And so it's not the ultimate way to generate your private key online. The next best way to do it is to get yourself a hardware device, and known as a cold storage device, that is air-gapped, in other words, not connected to the internet. Typically works via QR code, Bitcoin only. And when you have a Bitcoin-only device, you basically minimize, you know, the surface area of potential malware or, you know, attack vectors, hacks, all of those kinds of things. Because one of the issues with some of these other devices out there is that they support umpteen cryptos. And so when you have your precious Bitcoin stored and secured by a device that is also securing or supporting multiple other blockchains and cryptos, you just increase the risk of potential hacks, which could have implications for your Bitcoin in the future. And so for that reason, you want a Bitcoin-only wallet, and then you want one that's open source. In other words, the code is completely verifiable, on-chain, and there's nothing sitting in the middle of that.
Like a company.
So, you know, my My understanding, there's only a handful of cold storage devices on the market that actually fit that bill. I'm only aware of three or four of them, to be honest. But they're readily available, and it's really important when it comes to cold storage that you look out for those devices that have those three features: air gapped, open source, Bitcoin only. Yeah.
We won't
Oh,
go into
sorry,
a
Adam,
whole
and
lot of.
just to add to that, sorry, I meant to just you asked the question about what makes them more secure. When you set the device up, your private key that secures your Bitcoin is generated offline rather than online. Okay, and that's what makes it more secure. This is why cold storage hardware devices are generally regarded as more secure than just downloading an app on your phone and having all of your multi-generational wealth stored there. Now, it's not to say that we shouldn't use an app, if we want to transact in Bitcoin, have a small amount of Bitcoin that's not life-altering if something was to happen. But our main stack, we want to have that well secured in cold storage with the right setup.
Yeah, once you've gone through the process, it's a lot clearer. But what you're essentially saying is, don't leave. If you have to access your Bitcoin by logging into a website that is operated by somebody else, you don't own the Bitcoin, right? It's kind of like the difference between when you put your money in the bank, you now have counterparty risk with the bank. That's why all the old wogs in Melbourne bury their money in the backyard because they're like they want to stay bearers, right? They're like, well, like my friend Emil in Brisbane, he says, us, I think he's I can't remember what nationality he is. Mate, wogs have got like 100 grand buried around like dead bodies, but they're actually not
Now they're
wrong because,
realizing inflation's killing it, right?
well, interestingly, Tony, who runs the Bitcoin Way, the reason the Bitcoin Way exists is because his bank did take all the money in Lebanon. All the banks took all the money. And overnight, he lost everything, literally everything. The ATM stopped working in the whole country. And you can imagine the distrust that creates. So, in essence, just make sure that as a starting point that you're accessing your own funds. This is a hot wallet, by the way, if you're watching on YouTube, and it's just an app on my phone. And I got this at Bitcoin Prague because you could buy beer and coffee and hats and all that stuff. And they had machines where you just go up with fiat currency, feed it in the fiat currency into these black boxes, and a QR code would appear. And then you would just hit the receive button here on your hot wallet, and you would then scan the QR code, boom, and then the money would be in Bitcoin, Satoshis in your phone. And then if you wanted to pay somebody, you would hit the send icon and you would pay. And that's how it was transacted. I think I set a world record for the most Bitcoin transactions in a time frame at the event. So security is a whole journey, which we could speak a whole podcast about, but just understand that you are acquiring a bearer asset, which has huge advantages. Like right now in Australia, we're seeing, I'm getting, Zane, and I'm sure you're getting, so many people are just going, I'm exiting because taxes are going up. People are either exiting the state or the country. Many Victorians are migrating to Queensland because of land tax. They're just going, this is ridiculous. They know that Victorian state government's got a massive debt problem. And so they're getting taxed to death. And it gets to a certain point where people go, I want to relocate. And the beautiful thing about Bitcoin is they can't get your Bitcoin, like, because it's a bearer asset and it's in your head, the seed phrase, or it's on steel plates that you own. If you secure correctly, you can just leave and go wherever you want. They can't control you through the banking rails, and they know, if you don't pay your taxes, they take it out of your bank account, or they stop your bank account. They don't like what you're saying online, as we saw in Canada. They cut off your money, right, until you comply with what they want. It's very interesting. All right, so let's talk about the next one, which was superannuation. A lot of people, a lot of Aussies are like, can you buy Bitcoin in your superannuation? Can you buy it directly, or do you have to buy it indirectly through a exchange traded fund, or what's called an ETF? What conversations are you having with Aussies around buying Bitcoin in your superannuation?
Well, I'm having lots of conversations Adam, because people are realizing that their super is performing at around about 8% in stored in either an industry super fund or in a managed fund. I mean, we've seen ASFA, the Australian Superannuation Fund Association, puts out figures every year. And as of June 30, 2024, the 10-year return for superannuation funds in Australia has averaged 8%. And so the thing is that people realize that it's not enough to keep up with what we refer to as the hurdle rate, which is the rate of monetary expansion, which when you take into account that plus consumer price index inflation, it's more like 13 to 15%. And so if your money is not beating that hurdle rate, of that 13 to 15%, then essentially it's kind of like being out at sea in a boat or a dinghy with a hole in the bottom, and your entire financial future is slowly sinking to the bottom. And so people who are starting to wake up and realize this, they're going, well, I need to be in an asset that is going to beat that hurdle rate. And so they're saying, well, given that superannuation is kind of out of sight, out of mind for the next 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, depending on the age, they're going, well, this is kind of a low-hanging fruit opportunity to secure a meaningful amount of Bitcoin in my retirement account, in my superannuation, and a form of forced savings that they know they can't touch for many years to come that can get exposure to this asset. But then they're also saying, well, but if I can also take self-custody of that asset, then that's an even greater layer of I guess autonomy, for want of a better term, that they're going to have inside their super fund. Now they still have to do the annual audits and all the compliance and those kinds of things. And I typically refer people to a lady in Sydney who's been doing this for 20 years, and she specializes in setting up Bitcoin friendly superannuation,
Wow.
self-managed superannuation funds. The right statement of advice, fully compliant, takes care of the audits. That's all she does. So she's not an accountant with a whole bunch of other strings to her bow. She just specializes wholly and solely in self-managed super
Who
funds.
is that?
Her name is Natalia Clack, Clack. I can send you some details on that.
Tell her Zane sent you. Natalia Clack in Sydney, is
Yeah.
she? Yeah.
She's in Sydney.
If you need help with
And
that, because
we can put in the show notes, I'm sure, Adam,
please do
if you
send that
like.
over afterwards. Let me just take a note because this is the kind of stuff that people really need. So guys, I have some experience with this. I realized this myself. What was her name again? Sorry.
Natalia,
Natalia.
she, yeah, Clack, Clack.
Okay, Sydney, yeah, I'll get that afterwards. In 2020 or 21, I realized that, and I got all of my super fund. I self-managed it. I was doing nothing, and I put it into MicroStrategy, all of it. As soon as Michael Saylor announced that I'm going to start buying Bitcoin and Bitcoin only, and I got it right away, and so that's when it started going nuts, and I 15x'd my super in 4 years. And so that's it. That's beating inflation. But what Zane said before was so important that you heard that the Reserve Bank and all that try to tell us that, their target rate for inflation is 2 to 3%. It's nowhere near that. Like, is housing in Australia gone up 2 or 3%? If you don't want a house, maybe. Okay. If you don't want, how many people's food bill has gone up 2 or 3%? Nobody's. Nothing's gone up 2 or 3%. Tax bills, new taxes coming in all the time. I always go about the Gold Coast one just recently. This is just an example of how stupid it is and why property is such a diminishing appeal, is they've brought in a view tax. If you're over level four, now you get extra. Your rates notice went up by 50%, I believe it is, if you're over level four on the Gold Coast. Like, it's
Thanks, Tom
absurd.
Tate.
Yeah. And what are you going to do? Like, if you own that asset, there's nothing you can do. It's not like Bitcoin where you can say, I don't like these rules, I'm out. You either shut up and put up, or you sell up. Like, you can't do anything, right? So it's really important. And I think, unfortunately, the problem with inflation is that it forces everybody onto the risk curve. Because when you learn this, you realize if I don't start to, investing is not optional anymore. It is compulsory. And if you, and the quicker you understand what Zane said, and you say, what's my hurdle rate? 8% isn't going to get it done. You're actually going to go backwards at 8%. So what's outperforming that? Maybe leveraged real estate is, but Bitcoin is the global champion. You know, it's, nothing has beat Bitcoin, you know, in 16, 17 years. Gold beat it 1 year. That's it, in the last 16, 17 years. So you're seeing Aussies more allocating, and with their self-managed super, are they buying Bitcoin directly and cold storing it, or like, is that, you know, are they doing other things?
It's a combination of more and more people are doing the superannuation thing, but there are also many people who are divesting, say, real estate. So they might have a rental property portfolio. I spoke to a gentleman yesterday. He's got seven investment properties. He's in the process of, he sold two. He's in the process of selling another three. He's just going, deploying all that capital to Bitcoin.
Wow.
This sort of
Wow.
stuff is happening more and more, Adam. People are starting to feel the shift, the wealth transfer, and they're starting to notice that real estate, which has been this 100x opportunity that the baby boomers had, right? I think Peter Dunworth talks about this quite a lot. You know, the 100x opportunity in real estate that we've had in the last 50 years since essentially we came off the gold standard in 1971, that's not going to be here for the next generation. The next 100x opportunity is Bitcoin, right? And so
Interesting.
I say to my kids, you know, three girls in their 20s, if you guys want to get into the property ladder and not tap into the bank of mum and dad, right? Then the only way you're going to get there is with Bitcoin.
Good.
You know, and so we've set targets up for them, and I'm coaching them through their stacking targets with Bitcoin, because I believe that for young kids who want to get into the housing market, because it's not just building wealth, Adam, it's also that the whole family unit is under threat now. Because if you can't lay your roots down as a young person, fresh out of school, out of university, starting a career, right? And you can't lay your roots down and have, you know, a safe, secure place to call home, how on earth are you going to raise a family? Like,
Oh, 100%.
it's just impossible. And so
This
this all
is
ties into the situation we're faced with now.
this monetary inflation lie that has been sold to us has caused untold damage to Australian life. In the book, The Tao of Bitcoin, he said, we've turned our houses into hotels, our cars into taxis, and our bodies into porn. That's
So true.
actually a sad indictment on modern life in the West. And it used to be that the only thing you'd borrow for is a house. Then it became a car. 20% of Americans are now using buy now, pay later to buy their groceries. That's what inflation does. It steals the buying power of your dollar. How much different would the world be if an ordinary person could go and do an honest day's work, get their paycheck and save it, and that money was worth the same in 10 years as it's worth today? Imagine the difference that would make in the world to our level of peace, our ability to have kids and be able to afford things. Just yesterday, I was on Instagram and I texted this to my friend who's in real estate. This is a house in Sydney, 264 square meter block. It's a shit box, as you can see, sold for $5 million. It's not on the beach, it's just in the suburb of Bondi, right? In what world do kids have a chance now?
Yeah, no
And
chance.
so when people ask me, like, why do you think Bitcoin is good from a financial point of view, from a numbers point of view? I always say the same thing. There's nearly $1,000 trillion of assets in the world, about $900 trillion of assets. So we're knocking on the door of a quadrillion. And when you look at all of that money that's invested across these assets, there's a bunch of asset classes, the biggest being bonds, real estate's up there, the share market or equities is up there. Bitcoin makes up 2.2 trillion at today's price of nearly 1,000 trillion. Put another way, if all the world's assets were on a $100 note, Bitcoin's about, I think, 80 cents or something like that. It's something crazy low. Sorry, 20 cents or something. And so you've got all this money trapped in these assets. And I believe that money is going to continue to move out of these other assets and to Bitcoin. Why? Because Bitcoin has outperformed them all. It is by far and away the best performing asset on planet Earth every year, except maybe I think it's 2 or 3 years since it was created, and nothing else is even close. And it has all these other benefits to humanity. It gives us the first truly hard storage mechanism for our time, you know, which is what people need to understand. Money is an abstracted expression of our time. We spend what we need to survive, and we hopefully save what we want for the future. But the problem is the savings mechanism, the money, is broken because the government keeps printing more of it when we deposit ours, and it's just devaluing ours. So it's very interesting. I mean, I don't want to get too fired up. I want to talk to you and hear your perspectives, but
No, but just on that point, Adam, the sad part about that is that people are just diligently going about their life and earning these dollars, exchanging their value, exchanging their labor, their time, their energy, their intellectual knowledge, their skills, and earning this currency that is being printed into oblivion. And so they're going, well, okay, I'm just doing what I've been told to do, which is to save for a rainy day. And I mean, we know most people are struggling to save now because the cost of living is off the charts. But for those that do have a little surplus funds and they are trying to save for a house deposit or for a holiday or for whatever it might be, they're just getting eaten alive by inflation through no fault of their own. And this is the
None.
crazy part. And so, you know, I just feel like it's our duty to, you know, those of us who are aware of the problem to kind of enlighten as many people who are prepared to listen, because it's a sinister form of taxation, inflation. You know,
Oh, it's just
it was
theft.
the great Milton Friedman, prominent economist of the 1970s. He said, you know, inflation is taxation without legislation.
Yeah, but we never voted
And
for it,
we never voted for it.
and I that's the thing that I think. Yeah, we just, you know, people. It's not a political problem because Labor or Liberal, both parties are going to promise the population whatever they need to promise to get voted in, and those promises all come with a money printer. If you vote Labor, we'll give you this. If you vote Liberal, we'll give you that. But it's all just making more money up, right? Because they're not generating money. They're just printing it. So the only actual solution is not, there will never be a government in Australia or any Western country, I don't think, where they're going to be voted in based on austerity and cutting off money printing. It just won't happen. You can't win by saying we're going to be the political party that just makes things
Let's
really
everything
tight for a while.
reset.
Lets everything reset. They're never going to win. It's going to have to burn down. And so that's why vote with Bitcoin. It's your escape route, you know, as Lawrence Lepard said, it's your way to get out of the burning theater that doesn't need political permission. And that's sadly where it is. I get asked all the time, you know, why did you just leave Australia? I can't fix it. I can't, you know, I don't like it. I can't fix it, but I have options. You know, I've got a t-shirt that I picked up at Prague, and it said, they build the cage, but you hold the key. And I found that to be true. It's sad and it's heartbreaking. This week in the OECD report, Australia has now reached the second most taxed country in the OECD and is quickly on track to become the most taxed country in the OECD, which is, you know, not a title I think we should be overly proud of.
Be proud of now.
So talk about CBDC. You mentioned that in the pre-roll when we were chatting before you went live. Because a lot of people might see this and go, okay, governments are bringing out cryptocurrency. That sounds safer. Like let's convert our fiat dollars into the government's version of Bitcoin. Why might that not be a good idea?
Well, because it's centralized as opposed to Bitcoin being decentralized, you know. And so essentially, if you're being asked to download an app on your phone that is pegged to the central bank, the Reserve Bank, the European Bank, whatever bank, depending on the jurisdiction you're in, to a full surveillance money system. And you might say, well, what's the big deal? I'm a good citizen. I do everything I'm meant to do. I don't break the law. I pay all my taxes. But imagine a world where all of a sudden your digital identity is completely tied to your financial world. Carbon credits, right? Impact spending habits. You know, maybe you travel too far this month, and so next month they can potentially wind down how far you travel. So once you enter that central bank digital currency world, it just gives the central authorities the opportunity to really ramp up their level of surveillance against you. And so it's your digital ID, it's carbon credits, it's credit scores. You know, if you get a speeding fine, that could be a mark on your account, all of these kinds of things. And you know,
Think about COVID, you know, like these teachers and police officers who lost their jobs if they didn't take the jab, right? What an
the
easy way to.
GoFundMe pages in Canada, the truckers.
Yeah, with the truckers, when the truckers peacefully protested, as we should do in a democratic society, and the government closed the banks to them until they moved their trucks. So they weaponized the currency. And so, you know, and you know, it's the old saying, you don't value your freedoms until they're taken. And you might find yourself on the wrong side of it. Like, this is why I've been so vocal also about this hate speech rule that Australia's Labor government are trying to bring in, saying, we are bringing in this hate speech rule. If you say something that we deem to be hateful, don't worry, we're only going to get the extreme right crazies, right? The same. It's only those horrible racists, but it gives the Australian government the power to say to all the platforms that matter, like Meta, Instagram, Facebook, if somebody posts something that they deem is not true or is hateful, they can then begin fining at a huge level the platform if they don't take it down the minute they get notice from the Australian government. In other words, the Australian government, who have the politicians have proven to be some pretty nasty people, are the arbiters of what's true. And after what we went through with COVID, I'm shocked anybody would be supportive and dumb enough to say, I agree with that. And again, this is again where money becomes a tool to weaponize and control free speech. And if we don't have free speech, this is why I've said Elon Musk, in my opinion, should get the Nobel Peace Prize for buying Twitter and leaving it open, because it does honor free speech. And I'm a free speech absolutist. I don't care if somebody offends me. That's fine. But I want everybody to have the right. As he said, free speech only matters if you're willing to defend the right of the person you deeply disagree with to say it.
I don't agree what you say, but I defend your right to say it. You know, that's how it should be. Absolutely. And I agree with that. And it's funny, I was talking to a lady in Victoria today, and she was talking about land taxes and all of the draconian measures that are being put in place in Victoria that are causing people to leave Victoria at the moment, like you spoke about earlier, Adam. And she raised this thing of this phenomenon of Stockholm syndrome, you know, where people, even though you know they're empathetic to those who have done them harm in the past, you know, I think that's kind of the definition of what Stockholm syndrome is all about. But she's basically referring to most of the people she knows in her circle who, you know, just refuse to believe that no matter what, the system wants to do any harm to them. So, and this is even after everything that happened in 2020, 21, 22. I mean, how short are people's memories? It's mind-blowing to me.
Australians are just so easygoing and such nice people for the most part, because we've had it so good. But I've been traveling, as you know, a lot in the last 6 months. I've been all over the world, and Australia is probably one of the most complacent asleep nations in the world right now. It's not because they're content anymore, because there's a lot of discontent in Australia at the moment as well, and I think they're slowly waking up. But let's talk about where do we want to go from here? What I wanted to ask you about is you were a property guy. Mate, I'd love to get your thoughts on like how you think about property versus Bitcoin now. I sold all my real estate, everything, my own home and all my commercial buildings. And I know people thought I was crazy, and allocated a lot of it to Bitcoin or Bitcoin proxies. What's your view? Like why, how are you thinking about it?
Anything that doesn't have utility, I think you need to really consider what you're doing with it when it comes to real estate. Like everybody wants to have a comfortable home in a nice area if they can afford it and all those kinds of things. And, you know, we consider that, I guess, utility, for our lifestyle and our needs. But I think when it comes to investing in property, and I just want to share an example, a real life example with you, Adam, and the viewers, which really hits home this point about, you know, real estate and the conversation around should I keep real estate or buy Bitcoin? And it's a question that comes up a lot. My wife and I, we purchased a block of land very close to Burley, area called Palm Beach on the southern Gold Coast, in 2022. And it's got a couple of old houses on it that were built in 1971. And currently those two old dwellings that are situated on that block, we get good rent on those. But in 2022, we paid $1.5 million for that piece of real estate. And our intention with it is to knock the houses over and to build. Okay. I'm going to be a grandfather later this year for the first time. And I've got some visions and goals for what I want to do on that block. It's a big block. It's nearly 800 square meters right near the beach, all of that. But the thing is that when I started to price that house in Bitcoin, it makes your head spin. It really does. In 2022, $1.5 million would have bought you 47 Bitcoin at the time that we bought that house. So I think Bitcoin was hovering around 30 to 35,000 Aussie, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked these figures up the other day. So 47 Bitcoin, $1.5 million in 2022. Today, that piece of real estate has gone up in Aussie dollars to 2 million. So 25% increase thereabouts. In Bitcoin, how far do you think it's fallen?
Oh, God, I know.
So,
tell us.
So it's 12 Bitcoin now. So it's gone down in. So I want everyone to understand. So what we're doing
47 here, to 12.
75% drop in Bitcoin.
Yeah, if you price that piece of real estate against Bitcoin. I did, Zane, another. I bought my home in 2020 on the Gold Coast and I sold it 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And I bought it for 4.75 and I sold it for just under 7. If I put it into Bitcoin, I'd have had 25 million in the same period. Mm.
Yeah, so this comes out at 7.7.
Yeah, 7.7 million instead of 1.5. I'm sorry, 2. So set up
in
two or
three
seven by
in,
seven.
in 3 years.
It's crazy, isn't it?
And people say, oh, the Bitcoin cycle. I mean, this is in a flat market. Like, if we understand the halving cycle, which we won't get into today, but we've been in that sort of reasonably flat period the last few years. So, we're about to enter what many would say, the bull market of Bitcoin, given historically where it's been every 4 years and where we are now. But so
And
yeah, it's
I want to point out though, Zane, it's only been flat in the Bitcoin side. The real estate side hasn't. Like the real estate side in that time's boomed. So it's very interesting. And this is I think what people need to start understanding. And that, like I say to people, they say, well, Bitcoin's volatile and risky. And I'm like, okay, if you want to assess risk, do me a favor, go to ChatGPT and say, ask it, what is the survival rate of fiat currencies? Because if you're saving in dollars, that's what you're betting on. And you'll get the answer that 95% of fiat currencies fail. How do you like those odds, right? And how many of them don't deflate? Like zero, 100% of them are going to zero. The best performing fiat currency has been the US dollar, and over 100 years, it's lost 98% of its buying power. And that's the best of them, right? And
So true.
Bitcoin's CAGRing at 40% a year, compound annual growth rate. They go, but it's volatile. I'm like, I'll take the volatility. But the problem is because people have been in a fiat system where they're incentivized to get rid of their money. Like you said before, it's not just that it's a habit. The system, this is why Keynesian economics was sold to politicians, because he said, if you bring inflation in, it does a few things. One, it incentivizes people to get rid of the money and spend it in the economy. And secondly, it enables you to inflate your money supply and create cash, right? So the average punter is incentivized. They realize, well, it's no good holding this money. I'll buy the jet ski because it's only going to be more expensive next year, right? So buy now because it's going to be more expensive later. And so when you come out of that system, it just is really difficult for people to start pricing things in a hard asset. And they start to understand that actually Bitcoin is just volatile to the upside. And it's about having a low time preference. What I was going to say is that people from the fiat system have a high time preference, meaning that they need everything now because they're constantly broke. And money flows to those with low time preference, long-term investment time horizons, who can be patient, who can pass the marshmallow test of, waiting for the bag of marshmallows, as opposed to eating two right now. It's all very interesting. But guys, if you're listening to this, I think I speak for both Zane and myself when I say we have both been on the journey for a similar amount of time, 2017, 2018. And I'm at Bitcoin Prague in 2025. 7, 8 years after I started, and I'm still learning some of the most basic things that I go, oh my God, I didn't get that until now. It took 7 years for my dial-up internet brain to actually get that. Right? So I look at people like Michael Saylor and Jack Mullers, and I'm like, these guys are on high speed, super bandwidth. I'm like this dumb bastard that's only just starting to properly understand self-sovereignty and multi-sig wallets, and so don't put pressure on yourself, but do put in the time because this is important. And I really do believe that there is a genuine opportunity through this technology to change the course of your family's future. And but you have to act. Like Saylor said, there's two types of people. There's people who talk a lot about Bitcoin, but the people who really understand it buy it. And that's it. Zane, what else did you, have you got any last thoughts you wanted to share with the people before we wind this one up?
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of touch on that point there for a moment, Adam. Like, in terms of the understanding of Bitcoin and what it is, I really like what Jeff Booth says, and I know you're a big fan of Jeff Booth. And he refers to Bitcoin as the world's first global free market.
Indeed.
And I think when you start to think of Bitcoin actually as a market, like as a protocol, and as something that's totally repricing the entire financial system, everything starts to shift. And so I just encourage people, and this is, I think, one of the paradigm shifts that we need to go through, because I'm still going through it myself. When I hear someone like Jeff Booth, who gets asked the question, so Jeff, in your opinion, what is the true inherent value of Bitcoin today? One whole Bitcoin. And when he's coming and talking about Bitcoin from the perspective of it being the world's first truly global free market, he says, well, the value of of Bitcoin today is $43 million. And you nearly fall off your chair and you go, well, how do you get to that? And he says, well, if there's 900 trillion in addressable assets globally, and I know you alluded to a 1,000 trillion, but let's just call it 900 trillion, and you divide that by 21 million, if
Which
Bitcoin
is
is
done.
the world's, which is the amount of hard cap that Bitcoin is, you get 43 million. And essentially, so what he's saying in all of this, and there's more to this conversation than we can finish off with here, but he's essentially saying that all of the value in assets globally is going to be repriced in this new value system called Bitcoin. And it's such a difficult thing to
Get your
get
head
your head
around.
around, but the more I listen to people like him, the more I begin to realize that the world is going to look for a safe haven, even though Bitcoin wouldn't be considered a safe haven when priced in fiat dollars because of its volatility. When you're able to zoom out and you're able to think of it as a free market system that is decentralized, that nobody can corrupt, that nobody can change, that is repricing everything else on the other side, it's interesting because you start to realize, well, maybe he's right in all of this. And so it kind of begs the question, well, what could this mean, to our financial futures if we start allocating to Bitcoin in a meaningful way?
For those of you who want to follow Jeff, you can Google him. He's got heaps of stuff on YouTube. His book is called The Price of Tomorrow. Jack Mallers talks about a lot of the similar sort of concepts as well. He gave a great speech at Bitcoin Prague about how the young people have been just absolutely destroyed because their tomorrows were stolen through this fiat Ponzi scheme. So it is very, very interesting, and it will be challenging. But the good thing about Bitcoin is that you'll find yourself getting smarter the more that you listen to these people. When I went to Prague, one of the British speakers who's actually coming on the pod shortly, he put up some of the greatest people in history, the greatest musicians and artists. He says, "What do you notice about all these people up here?" And he said, "All got massive foreheads." And then he put up Michael Saylor and all these others. He said, "See, massive forehead, oversized brains."
Funny.
I wouldn't put myself in that category, but I got the massive teeth. I don't know what that's about, but I find myself like you should always want to be the dumbest guy in the room. And when you go to a Bitcoin meetup, I am yet to be the smartest by a long way. And I'm talking any Bitcoin meetup I go to, I just sit there and listen because there's some really bright people, and that's a really good sign that you're investing in a good spot, in my opinion, right? Like if you're looking for growth. So I think it's one of those times. And the other thing that Jeff says that I found really interesting, Zane, I heard him say it the other day. He said, "What people understand when it comes need to understand when it comes to thinking about timing. A lot of people go." I missed the boat, and they have this pricing bias against Bitcoin because they look at it's $100,000 or 110 or whatever it is today. And he said, the protocol war has only just been won now by Bitcoin. It's now got the governmental stamp of approvals, nation states, corporate treasuries, all these things have just now validated Bitcoin is the winner of the protocol wars. What that means is that the internet took 15 to 17 years or something before they settled on www. So HTTP colon forward slash, that's the protocol that runs the internet. But it was a battle. There were protocol wars for 15 years before it became clear that it was going to be www. And then all the layer ones and layer twos showed up, like browsers and search engines and da, 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 da. Everything was built on the protocol.
Amazon, yeah.
Amazon and trillions of dollars of economic value was built on the protocol. And so we're starting to see the first use cases of things like Bitcoin-backed lending, where you can keep your Bitcoin and borrow instantly against it. We just saw the US government yesterday came out and has instructed the banks, the White House has instructed banks that they must now value cryptocurrency holders' crypto holdings and use them in their assets and liabilities. Whereas before, it was against the laws for the banks to consider them as assets. And now that that law is being passed through the Trump administration, they have to be. So we're starting to see this layer ones and layer twos. And in the future, I think we're going to see a world where Bitcoin underpins large parts of the transactional landscape in the world. And those people who actually own it are going to be in very, very good place. And nobody can take it from you, right? It's just so interesting and exciting. And Michael Dunleavy said it's sort of like if the wheel, when it was invented, you could buy a spoke in the wheel. And for every bit of revenue that was generated, you got a piece as a one of the, yeah, very interesting. And the day you buy Bitcoin is the day Michael Saylor starts working for you, which is pretty exciting.
And just to round that off with the Jeff Booth thing too, Adam, because you were talking about the protocol thing, and he says that a protocol is winner take all, and technology is winner take most, right? And that's what Bitcoin
Correct.
is. People don't realize that Bitcoin is much more than just a technology. It's a base layer protocol
Correct.
on which all of these technologies are going to be built. And so when you're buying Bitcoin, you're actually buying a piece of the new internet of value, or the new internet of money, however you'd like to frame it. You're buying a base layer piece of that. And we didn't have that opportunity with the internet, did we?
No, it's incredible. Absolutely incredible. So, guys, I hope you've enjoyed this one. Zane, thank you, mate, for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. If you want to follow Zane, go to his YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/@ZaneTruscott. There's some links below for Stormrake, links below for the Bitcoin Way, and links below for Natalia Clack in Sydney, who can assist you if you're an Aussie wanting to set up a self-managed super fund. And guys, as always, if you've enjoyed this, subscribe. That's the first thing that you can do to help the show. Still less than half of the people who watch our show is the subscribers because they get caught up in the content. You love it so much, forget to hit that subscribe button. So please do that and also spread the word. And if you know any awesome Bitcoiners like Zane that we should be talking to, please connect me. I would love to be connected. You can hit me up on Instagram, give me a little bit of background. And the reason I do this show is purely to shine a light on this incredible technology and what it can do for people's lives in so many ways. So with that said, Zane, you're a legend. Thanks for coming, mate. Appreciate you.
Really appreciate the invitation, Adam. Thanks so much.
Hey there, I hope you enjoyed that episode of Unemployable. If you'd like to watch another episode, just click there.